Eye on Careers.
In association with Laymoon.com. Jobs, courses, and all things career.
It's the Career Clinic. For those of you out there pounding the pavement, trying to find a job, trying to get that next rung in the ladder, it's tough. It's a fight. But just remember, keep swinging because your next punch could be a knockout. This is Eye on Careers, and I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And it's an extra special Career Clinic because we don't just have another headhunter or executive search consultant, as we like to be called. We actually have the recruiter of the year, Toby Simpson from Gulf Recruitment. Toby, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, and thank you for the impressive introduction as well.
A little, I'll tell you, this song just never gets tiresome, I think. You know, it just charges you up.
It is awesome. In fact, I was listening to you on the way in today, and Eye of the Tiger comes on straight away. And it brought me back to my rugby days, because that is the speech that came afterwards from Shane Phillips himself, which was full of gusto and underdog status. It reminded me exactly of psyching up a team to go out and put their bodies on the line. It was inspirational stuff, and so I'm still psyched.
Would you play second row or
Number eight?
Number eight. Okay. Yeah. So you're quite a big number eight.
Yeah, the bigger the better.
How tall are you?
6'5".
Six five. So
you're not short yourself. No.
I played number eight as well, but I was much smaller number eight. I'm only 6 foot. So
right.
But yeah, I think sports is. I learned more about leadership and running teams on the sport field than I ever have in any classroom.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. That is spot on.
So you've been around for quite some time. I think you've been doing a great job. You're like me. I think you had the pleasure of going through the financial crisis year.
Yes.
which caused you to get your razor a little sharper than it was previously.
Absolutely. And I was here for the pleasure just before the crazy times when kind of anything went in the world of corporate hiring. But I think it's a really healthy thing to go through. I actually started my career in recruitment in 2001. In fact, I joined on the 1st of September 2001, which is pretty poor timing by anyone's standards. In London, recruiting in finance in the city.
Oh my God!
But actually starting in a tough environment and learning to to have to graft every inch to make any form of progress. The guys that came in 2005, 2006, when it was nice and easy, I think maybe that wasn't quite the learning ground that perhaps, I don't know when you started, but perhaps when you and I joined the beautiful game.
Yeah, I mean, well, you get the gift of desperation. Someone said, you've been given the gift of desperation. And I was thinking, I really would just like to take you out in the ocean and drown you for saying that to me. It doesn't feel like a gift at the time. But when I look back at it, I'm 10 times better than I was because of the financial crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think many companies here, your previous guest was commenting on it as well. The fact Dubai has learned and we're going through the process of rebuilding in a much more controlled, disciplined, well-governed fashion. And that's only healthy.
So, we are, you speak of the underdog. I mean, this is the city of the underdog. I mean, Dubai came out of the sand and just made global waves. It's an amazing, amazing place. And you basically have people from all over the world who want to come here and work. And so, obviously you're one of the first touch points that people gravitate to. What are some of the biggest mistakes people make when they're looking for a job here in the Middle East?
I would say number one has got to be the scattergun. Not knowing where you're going, where you're heading, not having a plan, and just trying to do everything and spreading yourself too thin. Ultimately, the job market is a market. It's still relatively competitive. So you're not really likely to get the job unless you have a very good shout at being the top of a particular shortlist for any particular position. The job market is a relatively efficient place. So people do tend to attract the best talent available to them. So if I was a job seeker, I'd really nail down not necessarily exactly what I did before and just focusing on that role, but really what have I got to offer? What sectors do I know particularly well? What other sectors have pretty much exactly the same dynamics, particularly from my career perspective? And what skills do I have to offer? So what kind of situation, what kind of job am I likely to be the best candidate? And if you nail down three or four opportunities in those sort of areas and focus on those sort of on those opportunities, you're far more likely to get a result.
I mean, I know what I call it is drowning man syndrome, because like you, when you see a drowning person, they flail their arms and legs like crazy because you think that's going to get you going. But if you just relaxed, took a deep breath, you float.
Yeah.
And you're fine, right? And so people, I think they get into this panic and they apply for jobs that you're not, you know, actually we had an ad for a female co-host for, and I had six men apply for the job, you know, and I'm like, well, I was just wondering what color dress you'll be wearing to the audition. He said, what? I'm like, yeah, you applied for the, you know, it makes no sense. But, you know, focus, when you always say the biggest opportunities in life come to those people who are most focused. I mean, if I look at even at your career, you have been focused in financial services, recruitment, executive search. So you know banking, you know wholesale, you know retail, you know private equity, you know the ins and outs, the difference between a chief investment officer for a private bank and a chief investment officer for an M&A team or whatever it is. You know, whereas, you know, if you have another headhunter who's maybe had the same amount of experience, 10 years, but they've been in four or five different industries, you know, are they really going to bill as much? I would argue that they won't.
I completely agree. Credibility as well. And knowledge is so important because it just gives the people, it gives your counterparts, and I'm sure you feel exactly the same, a level of confidence in your ability, a level of confidence that the advice you impart is going to be true and reflective and worth listening to.
Yeah, I think when what happens when you do the spaghetti offense, you may be, you know, if you have good education and a half decent, you know, CV, you can get into the interview, but you're not going to win the job because you don't know the ins and outs of the market. You don't know the competitive landscape. You don't know the companies inside out. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves is that, you know, you start asking someone some questions and it just drops off. They have no clue.
Yeah, absolutely. Or worse still, you know, dropping off is fine, but when you start asking the questions and realizing that individuals are out of depth, and when they start really trying to blag it, it's that's when I'd say that's worse than holding up their hands and saying, right, this isn't my area.
Right.
The blagging can be funny, you know, entertaining to some respect, maybe cruel. But
you know what though? I think when it comes down to is self-confidence is that when you're saying, I'm going to, you know, when you do that spaghetti offense, you're saying, I need a lucky break. I need someone to give me a helping hand. I need to find that secret opportunity in the market, versus the person who really has a lot of self-confidence. Like at the beginning of the show, I mentioned Yogesh Mehta, and he said, I'm building a chemical trading business. I'm going to make it a success. And so, you know, you need to have some self-confidence and self-belief. And sometimes you go looking in the market and really the issue is inside the executive themselves and saying, you know, what's driving this behavior? And let's address that first. You know, sometimes I think we so focus on the symptoms, we forget the cause.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You see it way too often. And I think, you know, the recent time has been symptomatic of that. We've had three very tough years, and you have really talented people, you know, pulling their hair out, not realizing why there's no opportunities or they, you know, have the sense they're missing out on a lot of things that are going on. And, you know, we're talking about something that's emotionally very important to people from a status perspective, which is very important, let alone the pure economic factors of being able to feed their family. So it can get incredibly an emotional process looking for a job, and it can lead people to irrational behaviors. And it's that focus and calmness and clearness of thought that's key throughout.
What do you advise, you know, the top three things or four things someone should do if they're going to hit stride here in their job search?
In the job search themselves, well, number one, as I said, remain focused. I think number two is really about when you get those opportunities to get in front of people, maybe not as the perfect candidate, is to make sure that time you spend with the counterparty really counts. And we've always said, and I'm sure you've heard this before, that a good salesperson has two ears and one mouth, and you should use them in exactly that proportion. So often. So often, people will fly in trying to get as much information as they possibly can out at the interview, you know, throwing bundles of information at people without kind of taking a time to sit back and maybe think and assess exactly what this person is genuinely interested in. It's normally only two or three things that are going to hook them. And if you can identify those two or three things within the first 10, 15 minutes of the interview, you have a much, much better chance of actually succeeding at the end of it.
Yeah, and I would, you know, what I would add to that, and I totally agree with everything what you're saying there. I think what you should add to it is you should know who the top 10 players are. Like, I mean, I just had an executive the other day saying, you know, Shane, I'm always really interested in private equity, and I'd like to get into the private equity space. Yeah. Okay, what are the top 10 private equity deals that took place in 2012? Who are the top 10 private equity firms? Who are the top 10 private equity executives here? You know, what's the genesis of private equity in the Middle East? You know, how big is the private equity market here? And what do you think the future is? If you can't answer those questions, then you're just not going to be competitive, right?
Or make a compelling argument to get into private equity. For it would say you and I probably hear it a lot. It's a very attractive industry. You have to make the logical leap about why someone in private equity would be interested to you. It's perfectly possible to make that step. But for example, they say, we want to get into private equity, but what do you offer? Now, if you come from a sector such as the oil and gas sector, you'll know you're going to be focusing on only certain different firms because there's a value to your experience. You know, if you're an oil and gas professional trying to get into, let's say, a kind of a venture capital tech startup thing, there's a bit more of a logical leap to get you there. But if you have a genuine reason, you can really think through what you have to offer. You know, you're far more likely, again, to get a result or to be heading in the right direction. And so, to know the firms that are likely to work out for you.
So you are, you know, on the front lines like I am, and I really feel that the market's on fire. I mean, what is your take? Are we in a bull run here? Is this a boom? Is this, we're in another boom town here? Or what's your take? What's going to happen in 2014?
Yeah, it's exciting. It is exciting because there's just that level of confidence again, that buzz that made us both fall in love with Dubai to start off the kind of anything's possible. But that makes me nervous as well. When you see the real estate market behaving the way it is, are we heading back to a boom or bust? I like to think it's a lot more sustainable. I like to think Dubai has learned. I like to think the economy is a lot more diverse than it was in 2007. And I like to think it's not dominated by only large caps. You have a genuine industry coming through, a genuine growth of SMEs, of real companies servicing real demand, which makes for a much healthier economy. So I have high hopes, and it's I think right now what we're seeing is we're actually doing our planning for the year going ahead, and we're looking at trying to do our financial forecast of when revenue comes in and this sort of thing. And we look back over the last 3 years, and you look at the monthly trends of which quarters, which months make the most money, and it's always quarter two. Q2, we tend to attract a lot more fees than we would in Q1 or Q4. And the reason for this is obviously, it's not because Q2 everything's happening. It's because in Q1 everything is happening. It's because right now there's a surge of ideas. Companies are sitting around their boardroom tables, scratching their heads, saying, what are we going to do? Coming up with fantastic ideas and then executing those ideas. And it's only in Q2 those things actually happen. But it's the ideas that are being formulated now will create the most important job creation, job creation few months in the year, in the months ahead.
Well, Toby, I mean, we just flew through that time, and unfortunately, I mean, I guess we'll have to have you on again sometime. But congratulations on winning Recruiter of the Year. It's amazing. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. We in the Gulf Recruitment Group are utterly delighted. We didn't expect it. We didn't see it coming. So when we saw the announcement, we were thrilled.
Great. So, well, thank you, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon. Thank you so much.
Look forward to it. It's been a lot of fun.
That was Toby Simpson from Gulf Recruitment, Recruiter of the Year. Coming up, we have Laurent Rovenal, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holding. Hello, and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we've had a pretty good show so far. We had Professor Sedwin Fernandez days on looking at management strategies in the Middle East, what approaches work, what approaches don't work, where's the gaps, where can we improve as business professionals here in the Middle East. Then we had Recruiter of the Year, Toby Simpson, giving you the ins and outs of working the job market here in the Middle East, the three worst things and some of the key things that you do need to do to find your stride and get some traction in your job search. research. But right now, you know, we have a very special guest here with us here in the studio. And, you know, I think when you look at the landscape, one of the biggest sectors is the hospitality sector. You know, the hoteliers really have a special spot in the heart of Dubai. And in fact, if you look at the job growth statistics, you know, one of the biggest growth areas for employment is actually in the hospitality sector itself. So with us is a man by the name of Laurent Wovenal. He's the Chief Executive Officer for Hospitality Management Holdings. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
This is Eye on Careers, Executive CV.
Laurent Wovenal took over as Chief Executive Officer of HMH, Hospitality Management Holdings, in October 2013. And he brings over 28 years of hotel management experience with some of the world's leading and most prestigious international hospitality brands. In his distinguished and celebrated career, Laurent has been associated with legendary hotel chains such as Starwood Hotels and Resorts and Hilton Hotels and Resorts that took him to some of the most fascinating and challenging destinations across Europe, Asia Pacific, and the Middle East. During the course of his posting, he demonstrated exceptional management and leadership skills in varied senior positions, overseeing strategic planning, business development, operations, financial and analytical processes, owner relations, brand conversion, and communications. Married with two children, he enjoys playing golf and sailing in his free time.
This is the story of Laurent Wovenal, the Chief Executive Officer. Laurent, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Welcome.
Bonsoir.
Good evening, Che.
And if there's one, you know, I think if there's one nationality you want to be as a hotelier, I mean, even the name hotelier is French, right? Well, I mean, did you guys invent this or what?
Well, I am not exactly sure where it's come from, but definitely French have a big part of the history when it comes to that business.
Yeah, but the actual name of the title, like, it doesn't matter what nationality you are. If you're a hotelier, right? That sounds French to me.
It is.
Hotelier. But I believe that the first hotel was actually in Rome when they had to create it for the Vatican, that people would visit from all over the world. So they created the first hotel. Is that true?
Well, I learned something tonight, James. As far as I'm concerned, I believe that Romans are absolutely fantastic hoteliers. So even if they are not French, that's still okay.
Okay, so like, I didn't know that the French would accept someone else into the brotherhood, if you will. But that's good to know that the Italians. But I went to Rome and wasn't that impressed with the customer service, though, personally. You know, they're a little bit, you know, the Rome people themselves in that area, they're a little bit colder, slightly, a little bit.
Let's put it this way. I believe that every single large capitals have some issues. And, you know, Europeans are definitely on the top of the line. I don't think that French are better than Italian in that respect. You know, very often, you know, we have stickers in our backs about, you know, who are we and, you know, where do we come from. I think that Romans hoteliers are doing absolutely fabulous job, as good as the French. In that respect, you know, the largest room in the world is the room for improvement. So I'm pretty sure that we all can do better than that.
I love that. Is that the largest room in the world is the room for improvement? That's awesome. But I think Dubai is really making a name for itself, though. Now, you know, for example, when you have to be part of the hotel experience in Dubai, whether you like it or not. And then when you travel somewhere else. A lot of the hotels have, I think Dubai is really making a mark for itself. Like the level of the hotels here, is it world class in your opinion? I mean, I'm just a pedestrian, you know, layman here. I don't know, but in your opinion, where does Dubai fall on the map?
Well, I will say that if you look at the overall industry, Dubai will be definitely one of the top 10 destinations in the world.
Will be one of the top 10 destinations?
Absolutely. When they come to services, yes, I believe so.
And where were they 10 years ago? They weren't on the top 10 list 10 years ago. Like, how recent has it been that they stepped onto the global stage in this area?
Well, look at the numbers of hotels, for example, Dubai had 10 years ago, and look at where we are today. And think about, you know, how are we going to be tomorrow, you know, with Expo 2020 coming up over there. And the numbers of rooms are going to increase drastically. From 85,000, we are going to be almost an additional 96,000 coming up by 2020.
Wow.
So most of them in all categories, but 5-star and 4-star. And therefore, the service has to improve in every single categories if we want to keep up basically with the pace of what the industry is doing.
I mean, I was just driving down Sheikh Zayed Road, and I think Al Hub Tour Group is building their new hotel where the Metropolitan was. And all of a sudden, this thing is just it's like all of a sudden appeared. It's like, I don't know how many stories high. It's amazing at the pace that this place grows at.
Yeah, it's three hotels, actually.
It's three. There you go. That's how we have to do it in Dubai. You can't just have one. You have to be three. You have to be the biggest in the world. We have to be the best. But I think from a career perspective, if you just look how much his Royal Highness Sheikh Mohammed has changed the landscape just in the last 5 years or last 10 years, imagine how much you can change your own life in the next 5 years. Imagine how far you can take your own career in the next 10 years. It's amazing.
Not only it's amazing, but I think that, you know, we are extremely lucky here in this country to have leaders which have visions. And, you know, the business is about visions. If you don't have a visions, you know, tomorrow you die. In that respect, Dubai is absolutely on the top list, you know, when it comes to expansion and when it comes to vision. So again, you know, congrats to the leaders here.
I was actually just reading before the show. I said one of the quotes from, I can't remember, one of the famous CEOs. He said, you know, the purpose, the leader is defined by their ability to take a vision into reality. Do you agree with this?
I will agree. I think that a good leader needs to do three things. First of all, the number one, he has absolutely, you know, to set the directions, the objectives. Then the second one, he has to align the people, because he cannot do it alone. So he has to align the people. And the third one is very simple. You just have to deliver the result. So three simple steps, but that's basically the key of the success.
Very, very simple, very easy. But, you know, I think one of the other things that's really important in a success story is focus. And I don't mean focus in the idea of focus on what's in front of you on your desk. But I think, you know, like if I could quote Les Brown, one of my favorite motivational speakers, he said, you know, there's a guy sitting in a tree and he has shade, but the person who planted that tree planted it decades ago. Mm-hmm. And that's how success, that focus over time, or what Yogesh Mehta says, being patient. And I think you are three generations as a hotelier. I mean, how many generations deep are you in this business?
Well, my grand-grandpa was an hotelier. My grand-grandma was an hotelier. My mom was an hotelier. And I am. So I think it's basically four generations there already.
You say it much better than me, hotelier. How do you say it? I'm embarrassed to say it now. I mean, it sounds like music when you say it. Well, or hotelier.
I'm going to say that Shane style. Hotelier.
That's okay. I'm Canadian, and they make fun of Canadians all the time. I think every nation, the Americans do it, the Brits do it, the Australians do it. We get it from all angles. So, you know, France will just have to wait in line on that. But this is the story of Laurent Rouvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings. He'll be sharing his secrets to making it in one of the biggest businesses in the Emirate of Dubai in just a minute. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And, you know, when you look at Dubai, it is such a big part of it is the hospitality business and travel and tourism. And we've really seen, you know, as well as the aviation sector, so many of the sectors have grown. I mean, we'd be here all night if I started listing all the success stories that we have in town. But one of the real exciting things is the hospitality area. I mean, you living in Dubai, you can literally just go down the street and it feels like you're in a 5-star resort. And here with us is one of the leading hoteliers. Of course, I don't say the word properly, but Laurent Rouvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings, is here with us. Laurent, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Hi, Shane.
Just before, for those of us just joining us, you were saying, you know, from a leadership perspective, there's just really three simple steps that you need to have. Could you just repeat those again for us, for those who are just joining?
Sure. you know, a leader needs to have a vision. So basically, when you have a vision, you need obviously to set up the objective and the directions. The second step will be definitely to align the people, because you cannot do the job alone. And the third one is basically, you know, deliver the results.
And results. But, you know, when you look at vision, you know, my humble opinion is based on having a huge data set or having data that your competitors don't have. And one thing is being three generations in the business. And also your career has traversed the world. I mean, you've worked in France, you've worked in Tokyo, you've worked in Hawaii, on Honolulu, back in the Middle East. Can you quickly give us that path that you've walked through?
Yeah, that's you know, like a typical hotelier. Basically, I studying quite young, you know, during the summer, and then I started to work in France in a 5-star hotel where my mom was actually an executive housekeeper. Then after that, I moved to London because it was time for me basically to brush up a little bit my English. And then after that, I starting to move a little bit around, you know, various countries, work on a cruise line, did all the Caribbean, the Bahamas. Then, you know, came back a little bit in Europe, did my military service like everybody else, and basically continued to study after that. You know, went to Hawaii, worked for 4 years over there. Before that, I was in Okinawa, where I met my wife, had a baby there, and actually moved to Hawaii, as I said, you know, and get my second babies. And then at this point of time in my career, I said, okay, well, if I want
to... So your kid was born in Hawaii?
One of them was born in Okinawa, Japan, and the other one was born in Hawaii, yes.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool. At least they have several passports, that's cool.
They literally covered, they both, like, your kids are born on one each side of the world, basically.
Yeah, I try to be as close as possible, but that's quite far anyway. a few Pacific Ocean in between. But nevertheless, you know, it was quite a lot of fun. But when you arrive at some point of time in your career, if you want to continue to grow up, you have to go back. You have to go back and learn. And that's basically what I did. You know, I was 30 plus. I was married. I had two kids. And I decided basically to go back to university because I just needed to upgrade my CPU.
Great, my CPU. Okay, and what did you take?
Basically, economics.
Okay, why not hotelier degree or something?
That's a good question. When you're 30, when you're French, and you're born and raised in a hotel business, trust me, that's the last thing that you want to learn. Because, you know, you have it at home every single day. When you have a ma and a grandma, which was both executive housekeepers in 5-star hotel, trust me, you know about the hotel even before you learn how to walk. So I did not really need to go back to the hotel school, but definitely I needed to learn how to make more money. And make more money, I'm not talking about for my salary, I'm talking basically for the business. And therefore, economics was definitely the best way to get where I wanted to be.
Absolutely. And so if we just go back to your three steps was vision, and creating the objectives, aligning the people and delivering the results. You know, when I see people, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make in their career is they do 5 years in one industry, 5 years in another industry, and then they zip back into another industry. And that's fine for middle management or general manager. But when you want to be a CEO and you want to deliver that vision is based, in my humble opinion, on that huge data set of understanding the business better than your competitor, of gaining that information that other people don't have, and that happens, that gestates over time. And I don't know if you would agree or disagree, or in your mind, what are the building blocks of having that vision?
Well, I think that what you say, Shane, is absolutely correct. I will add only two things, which I believe is quite important. The number one is that you need to start with the end in mind. You know, it's what Stephen Covey used to say, you know, in his Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, begin with the end in mind. Very early in my career, I know what I wanted to do, and I knew exactly where I wanted to be. So I always focus on that objective, regardless of that. The second thing was, I believe on the top of what you said, was that sometimes when you're too close to the problems, obviously you don't see the problem. So every time, basically, I was getting too close, I had the ability to be able to take a step back and take, you know, the helicopter view in order for me to always look at the big pictures, in order to keep focus on the visions and not on the tree which hide the forest.
So, you look at creating that vision, and it's not about going out into the desert and meditating, although maybe you may have a vision there. I don't know how related it will be to your business. But when I see the people, whether it's Steve Jobs or it's Laurent the Hotelier or whoever it is, they have huge data set, deep understanding of the business, and that sprouts the vision. But now your next step, aligning the people. Now, this is where a lot of people drop the ball, right? So what are really the keys to aligning a team?
Well, that's maybe the most difficult part, because it's our industry, it's all about people. Let's not make it more complicated and more difficult than what it is. If you know how to manage people, if you know how to lead people, you will get the job done. You know very well that in the small organizations, you manage the business through the people. When you manage a large organization, you also manage basically through the system. People are the key of the success. It is absolutely vital to look after them, to take care of them, and to respect them. Now, the fact that a lot of organizations are doing that, it is not enough. Today, you just need basically to be very attentive to the needs of the associate, and especially in Dubai, when you know that the job market is absolutely so much under pressure with all the new openings and the hotels which are opening almost every other month. So aligning the people, it's really basically to understand what the people want and try to be able to deliver exactly what they expect. A long time ago, a few years ago, we used to call the associates, not an associate, we call that, internal customer. We have the external customers, which are the one who pay our salaries, and we had the internal customers, which was the associate. And as soon as we as managers, we as leaders, we as entrepreneurs, we are considering an associate as an internal customers, then therefore it's our duty to make sure that we take care of them the best we can.
I was just actually this morning with Mark Shuttleworth, the CFO of Do, and he climbed Mount Everest, and he said, and it was one of the worst times of all. Many, many people died apparently, and within the 24-hour time he was on the mountain, and he was in a blizzard, and people asked him, did you ever think of turning back? And he said no, and the reason why, and he said this was kind of a learning from a leadership perspective as well, is that they had unbelievable trust in the Sherpa, and a lot of times the team don't trust the leader, they're not going to follow you, so and part of it is what are the building blocks of trust. What are the building blocks of creating that ownership as well? So there's one thing that that you're going to say, this, turn left on this rock. This is how we're going up the mountain. This is the way we're going to build the hotel. That people are going to trust your opinion, and then executing. I think what is it? It's ownership at the end of the day. You can't be the only one who's owning the vision and strategy. They have to feel ownership as well, don't they?
No, absolutely. A good vision is the vision which is understood by everybody. A shared vision is the one which basically take a part of the visions and carry its own weight. And a good leader is exactly this. Make sure that basically the vision is understood. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. It is extremely important that when it comes to visions, when it comes to leadership, the people do understand what you are talking about. Very often, you need to give the empowerment to all the associates. They need basically to own the system. And every single country has different ways to do things. If you said, just do something, most of the people will not do it. That's not basically the way they are going to plan to do that. Now, if you drop the idea and say, oh, by the way, I have a problem, how do you suggest that we can solve that? They are the one who solve the problem. That's become their problem and then become their solution. They are the hero, not you. Even if you drive them exactly where you would like them to go. So you have many, many ways at every single level of the organizations to make sure that every single associate is accountable basically for the work that they are doing, and you can give them the ownership. The problems now that we are facing in Dubai is the pressure that we have on the labor force due to the numbers of openings which basically are coming almost every month, as I said earlier.
Historically, when we look at strategy, it's been developed by the few and executed by the many. Often this plotting goes beyond closed doors. And now as we move into the 21st century, we're having open source platforms. In fact, companies are even outsourcing on the net. There's a website where, you know, they're putting their strategy packets and they're having basically tenders and auctions for people to come up with the best strategy. With technology, the interportals that organizations are working on, frontline workers are having direct access to the CEOs. How is that? Do you see that feed loop actually is going to change in the 21st century, where we're going to see more of a bottom-up organization than a top-down? Or on the other flip side, do you still need that person taking the direction and taking the decisions and driving the team forward?
Well, I think that the workforce is getting clever and clever. First of all, they have access to information that, you know, 20 years ago they did not have. But the end result is, at some point of time, you will always need someone who's going to take the directions, who's going to set up the visions. It may not be alone, it may be a group of people, it can be a board of directors, but you will always have someone at the top which is basically going to set the direction, because he's going to be accountable for.
You know, Abraham Lincoln, one of the presidents of the United States, he was making the proclamation for, you know, the freedom of the state of the slaves. He brought all his 12 or 13 closest advisors in, and they argued about it, and then they said, okay, let's have a vote. All the nays, raise your hand. And, you know, 12 of the 13 raised their hand, no. And then he raises his hand and he goes, well, I guess the yeses have it then. Goes forward.
That's the way it goes.
So, great. This is the story of Laurent Wovenel, the chief executive officer of Hospitality Management Holdings. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what it takes to be success in the Middle East market. Opening the show, we had Professor Sedwin Fernandez, the chief executive officer of the Institute of Technology Management Dubai, talking about you know, some of the theories that you look at that are developed in the West. You just can't take them and apply them into the Middle Eastern market. You know, you really have to look at what makes this market unique, and he provided some insight into that. And he said, you know, the number one trait to be successful, from his opinion and his research, is execution, execution, execution. And of course, he had a few other things after that. But I really liked how he put an emphasis on tactics. And then we had Toby Robinson, Recruiter of the Year from Gulf Recruitment, and he was looking at, you know, some of the worst things, the things not to do when you're looking for a job in the Middle East. And he said one of the worst things to do is have that spaghetti offense, you know, going and applying for jobs across industries. And of course, we can see those tenets of success coming up in Laurent Wovenel, who's the chief executive officer of Hospitality Management Holdings, who's been in the same industry for three generations. You know, you stay in that same industry, you keep that focus, and you drive things forward. And now let's look at, you know, one of the most interesting segments. We've been talking to Laurent Wovenel, who's really been giving us some insights into what it takes to be successful in the hotel business. Laurent, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Hi, Shane.
You know, we were looking at your three-step process. Was first, you know, develop a vision, align the team, deliver the results, as some of your insights. But we have to ask everybody who comes on the show one question, which is, what is your secrets to success?
Eye on Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
So, Laurent, what's your secret to success?
One word: passion.
Passion.
Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
I think, you know, passion plays a role. But isn't it, though, that once you're good at something, you become passionate about it? Like, what's the building blocks of passion? Is it just that you randomly wake up as a child and you're passionate about something? Or is it that you're obviously going to be passionate about being a hotelier because you're naturally good at it, because you grew up in the business, you have an advantage over everyone else?
No. I, I will not agree on this one, Shane. You know, passion is not something that basically you have and you keep for the rest of your life. Passion is there, and that's something that you have to build absolutely every day. Like every single successful person, you know, at some point of time, you also have some failure. If you don't have the passions, you know, to take you back on track and get, you know, on the field again and be the best, then obviously you will not make it. You will not make it to the top. Passion is really the driving force of every single successful person. Now, having said so, we know that, you know, as a successful person, we know that we have a family behind, you know, and the family is very, very often, you know, even more supportive and even more passionate than what you are. You know, Pastor used to say, behind every single successful man, you have even a more successful woman, and that's exactly what it is. We are working a lot. We are working a long, long hours, and if you don't have a strong family behind you who understand the passions of your job, then obviously it will be difficult to make it to the top.
So passion is number one. What do you see as some of the other successful traits people need to have if they want to make it to the top?
Well, I only can talk for myself, but far as I'm concerned is you need to learn. And, you know, I'm 54, and I continue to learn every day. You know, and it's not because I graduated from the university. I still continue on the regular, every year almost, to go back to London Business School or INSEAD just to take refresher courses for executive, just to, you know, again, upgrade my CPU. Learning, you
I love this. I love this phrase, upgrade your CPU. I mean, so many people are not upgrading. They're out, you know, they have an obsolete CPU.
That's some of the people may still work on those, but that's something different. Then after that, you need to invest. You know, you need to invest your time. You need to invest, you know, yourself on everything you want. You know, you learn, you invest. And then after that, you move on. Because at some point of time, you are stuck in your career and you should not be able basically to make a move. You know, you still focus on your business. You still focus on your career. But if an organization is not able to deliver what you expect from that organization, at some point of time, you have to make a move. And that's exactly what a lot of people, unfortunately, are doing in Dubai. They are changing from job to job just, you know, for a few dirhams, which I can understand. But very successful leaders will definitely, you know, keep the focus, continue to learn, continue to invest, and at some point of time, we'll move on.
We have one of the listeners here going in saying they're looking for a job in facilities management, but they can't find a job on the job portals or hotel websites. And, you know, my advice to be would be first go to laymoon.com, your career channel, which is always a good one to try. But I also say, make a list of the top companies and approach the CEOs directly. And I'd like to bounce that strategy off you, Laurent. If somebody comes to you directly, you know, and doesn't go through the online thing and approaches you and says, hey, I really love your strategy. You're focused on the mid space in the hotel market, if I'm correct. Is that correct? So,
yeah.
So, you know, they know your strategy, they know your approach, and they're passionate about it, and they approach you directly. How would you respond to that? There's a lot of people saying, I can't call the CEO because it's going to annoy them. It's going to, you know, they don't want to talk to me. You know, do you like being contacted by top talent who know your business, who know the strategy, who know the market?
Absolutely. Every day I get contacted directly through, you know, various channels, and I reply personally to every single of them. You know, it's very simple. At the moment, we have 20 hotels in the Middle East, you know, in Africa. We are going to open 5 new properties this year. We are, you know, fairly large organization in the region, but, you know, internationally we are quite small. So when you open 5 properties and when you already have 20, you know, you are going to increase your portfolio by 25%. 25% increase, for us, it's a big amount. So far as I'm concerned, as I said earlier, you know, we do a people's business. We do a people service. And therefore, every single person who contact me directly, you know, to get a job, definitely we check the background, we do the resumes and all the things, but they're absolutely more than welcome. And as I said, to all the key positions, I reply myself personally.
There you go, for ladies and gentlemen who are hiring, who are out there, you've heard it from the horse's mouth directly. You know, the top CEOs in the region, they're growing their businesses. Laurent's growing by 25%. He's looking for top people. But guess what? You know, if you're not in the hotel business, you know, don't waste this time. You know, you know, be passionate about your profession, and the opportunities are there. What's your last piece of advice for anybody out there, if you wanna make it or just get that next rung? Or,
well, again, if you want to make it to the top, you know, learn, invest, and move on. And if you're already at the top, well, just enjoy the ride because you have more years behind you than you have a front.
Laurent, thank you so much for your time. Unfortunately, that just flew by like lightning speed, and we'd love to have you on again sometime.
Thank you, Shane.
And which is the newest hotel opening up? Maybe we should go visit it. Is there one coming up soon?
Yeah, actually, we have one hotel coming in Beirut, which will be opening early August. We have one also opening in Sport City. It will be one of the very first opening there in Dubai. We have two hotels opening in Sudan, one in Port Sudan and one in Khartoum. And we have one opening most probably at the last quarters or maybe a little bit earlier in Oman.
There we go. Lots on the horizon. Well, thanks again, Laurent. And bonsoir, and we'll see you soon.
Merci beaucoup.
And the last thing I can say is I just wish you all the best chasing your dreams. Never give up. Those dreams will become reality if you believe in them and keep working at them. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, signing off.